should always be an ongoing negotiation between the product manager and the team. It's much more of an art than a science.
Hey friends, welcome back to Product Table Podcast. If you are new here, my name is Elvis. I am product manager based in Riga. And on this podcast, we explore ways how to get into product management, discover strategies, techniques, and tools that help us to become a better product manager. And today I'm super happy because we are launching something totally new in our podcast, and this is weekly definitions. But what does it mean? It means that we will invite some people from the field that will try to explain as short as possible and also give some, let's say, historical background and the meanings of this particular phrase, what PM is actually using day to day, and to see how you can learn also from it. Today, I have again episode with Nils Jens, who is founder of Deliber and author of amazing book Epic Alignment, and he is back to reveal us and teach us more about user stories. Welcome back, Nils. How are you feeling today?
Thank you so much for the introduction, and thank you for having me back again. It was great being here last time, and I'm of course happy now that I'm back to see you again, Elvis.
Yeah, this is super cool. So maybe to those listeners who haven't heard the previous episode, and I really advocate you that you should listen to that episode. Maybe Nils, you can explain what is Deliber as an elevator pitch to our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So Deliber is a tool for product managers that helps them work with the whole feature development process more smoothly. It's a document writing tool similar to Google Docs, but it's adapted to how product managers work and allows them to work with all the information that they get bombarded with in a better way and integrates with Jira and so forth. Yes, so that's Deliber. And like you mentioned, the book I wrote, so during the development of the product, we interviewed over 300 product managers, and based on that, we tried to gather up the what we learned during that work, and that became the book. It's called Epic Alignment: How the Best Product Managers Work with Feature Documents.
Yeah, I believe most of people that are maybe listening this word epic for the first time, and actually this is something ground that we can already maybe kick our conversation. So maybe Nils, you can briefly say what is epic, why do product managers and product teams need epics in the first place?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the word epic is, as a word, it means a really long story or an epic story that goes that covers more than what a normal story would cover. And so for those familiar with user stories, then epic is like the big brother of a user story. So normally when you work with user stories, you gather up a few user stories that belong together into an epic, and that's an epic. And the reason why product managers need it is because if you look across the whole work that product managers do, there will be a lot of user stories. The human brain is much better at working with a fewer number than pieces than just too many. So be able to handle it, epics are really neat and handy to gather up and have a bit of a focus around the few user stories that are connected, to put it simply.
Yeah, so if I rephrase to just our like native being in the world, it's something that epic is a house, right? For example, and everything that is into this house, those are objects, those are actually like stories in this concrete home and like epic bundle. Is that correct? Something on
yes,
this way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then the product is the whole village then.
Yes, super cool. We covered previous time the chapter number one of your book, and the chapter number two is actually saying more about why user stories are needed and why it's shared language for all PMs and for product teams. So maybe you can give us just understanding why the name is user stories and when did this came from.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about last time around how one of the most important things for product managers to do is to get out of this corner of being the requirements gatherer that just pulls things together. And the user story concept actually developed during the turn of the century, around right before the millennium, the new millennium, in the XP movement, the extreme programming movement, when there were a number of developers and product people that worked together to find new ways of working. And new ways meant different ways than the previous waterfall methodology, which was the kind of the predominant before that. And in the waterfall system, there's, I mean, you could call somebody a product manager, but they were not. Most product managers were more akin to requirements gatherer that just collected the information and handed it on. And during that work, there was something called a use case. That was the main thing that the requirements gatherers often worked with. And they were similar to user story, but they were not the same, because they were not as focused on the benefit to the user. They were just something that had to be done because of the sake of it. And so when this movement, that when they looked at this and then tried to shape it around, they decided to try to tell the story from the user's perspective and say, try to really express why is this relevant for the user to have this new feature or this new development. And then they, in line of that, then they basically renamed and reshaped the use case into user story. If you want to really go back into being a requirements gatherer, you should only talk about use cases and never talk about user stories. But if you want to be like the product manager that is in charge of what to develop, tell a story about why it's relevant for the users and talk about user stories.
Interesting. So it's all started with extreme programming. I think one key person that we for sure must mention is Kent Beck. Also back in 1998, actually wrote the blog post and also like first edition of the book, Extreme Programming. This is how later it started. But one another person that I think is worthwhile to mention, and actually he is also giving a foreword to your book, is Jeff Patton. He's an excellent guy. He has a book, User Story Mapping, right? So I think this is the mantra for every product manager that are starting career. And we understood that there are user stories, right? Maybe you can tell what is the common structure for them. Like, for example, let's imagine we want to build a house. What would user story would look like?
Yeah, exactly. I have to take a step back, because it's also a full methodology. And then you have to ask, so who's the user of the house? Okay. And what is the most important thing for you to have? And the idea with the extreme programming and agile way of developing product is not to build the full house in one go. The waterfall approach would be to make a complete drawing of exactly what the house is going to be, and then first you build a really, really thorough foundation, and then you put, but no, that's not used to anybody, and then you keep going with all these things. And if you would do it with user stories, maybe you would have one user story is what do you call somebody that as a tenant, maybe if you're the person that rents this house, as a tenant I want to be protected from the rain so that I can be dry when it rains. Maybe that's what you would say. And if that could be one user story, and the format is as a tenant I want to be protected from the rain so that I can be dry when it rains. And then you go back and you say, okay, so this is a user story. So the tenant wants to be protected from the rain. And then you could also add another story is, as a tenant, I want to be warm when it is cold outside so that I don't freeze. And then you can add maybe, and then there are more, as a tenant, I want to be protected from the wind when it's blowing, so I can keep my nice haircut, or whatever different things your research tells you is important to the user. And if we now say that these are the three user stories, it's a very simplistic case. But then you could just say, I'm going to do the first user story only. Mm-hmm. And then, what is this house? Well, it's just a roof. Maybe it's you put a few poles and you just make something. You could be a cardboard across. And then you could be there and it could rain and you would still be dry. So then the first iteration would be just that. That's the single user story. It solves that particular need. And then you continue working with it like that. This is the whole approach of Agile. There's a very common where you go, how to build a car. Have you seen this illustration? It's a meme. They go, the kind of waterfall way is that you start with one wheel and then you make another wheel and then you make some part of the car and then you add the steering wheel and then you can ride it. But then you build it from the bottom up and it's completely useless until it's done. And the agile way of making the car is that you start with a skateboard. And then it's a bike. And then it's a motorcycle. And then it's a car. So it's iterative. You build the first most simple thing first. In that case, I want to be able to move ahead without making any effort while it's a downhill. Then the skateboard works. And in our case of a house, I don't want to get rain on me. Then just having a roof is good enough. The approach to building a house based on user stories. I guess one thing that was completely weird with both of these examples is that it's not very effective to build a house with just building the roof first and then add the walls and then add the other things. It's more effective to just have the full drawing of the house and build the whole house. But that's only the case if there's no uncertainty. If you know exactly what the end result is, then you don't need to be agile. And then waterfall works perfectly. But and that's true for houses.
Completely.
For software development, it's so complicated and so complex and things change all the time. So if you spend a whole year developing a software and then you launch it, it's likely that it's late, too late, or people changed, or it wasn't what they wanted to begin with. So that's why in this very fast-moving environment, you have to make the work much more iterative. Mm-hmm. That's why this whole agile approach is valuable, and then the user story approach is a really good one.
Yeah, thanks for this input. Regarding also user stories, I have found one interesting point called acceptance criteria. So what I am understanding as a like new PM is that this is something that I am saying to my engineering guys that this ticket, let's say this user task, should be only fulfilled once those items are, let's say, ticked, right? Can you comment on the acceptance criteria, like mission
yes,
and vision?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's if I remember correctly, it's one of the other ones you mentioned, Ken Beck, another one is Ron Jeffries. He came up with a great framework called the 3 C's. That I think describe this quite well. His perspective is that for a user story, there are 3 C's that are relevant. The first C is the card. Then they come from a very physical analogy. You would write it on the card, and then you write the user story. And then there's the second C is the conversation. Because the user story itself is only like a bookmark. It's like for you to remember, this is the thing we're talking about. But then you will talk a lot about it and you will have a discussion. You will attach information. You will attach like this was the customer feedback that we got. And this you will attach some designs that some designer did. And you will talk with the developer and say what's difficult, what's easy to do and back and forth. And then towards the end of this conversation, you need to sum it up. And then you say, okay. So for this user story, what are we saying that we need to do? And then the third C is called confirmation. And that's basically how can you confirm whether the user story is fulfilled or not? Mm-hmm. And that's often expressed as acceptance criteria. The main thing is that it's important that the product manager and the team have a clear agreement on what it means for this to be completed and also what does not need to be included. It's as important to agree what needs to be included. Because sometimes a reason for a user story being difficult to make or taking a long time is that there's a misconception among the developers that it really needs to be able to work for 1 million users simultaneously, for example. But maybe that's not the case. Maybe it will never be more than 100 in this particular small thing. And then you don't need to do it, so you don't need to prioritize that. That's not part of the acceptance criteria. But basically, acceptance criteria is the things that you agree that should be fulfilled for the user story to be considered completed.
Yeah, and I think also one important point is that you cannot like always predict in the future all like everything like covering this acceptance criteria, because as you mentioned, in our life things are changing, right? When the software will be shipped, there will be already new needs and new, let's say, users that will be using the app, right? So it's do not like take into as a granted that this is your final like user task for your team, and you will completely 100% fulfill it. No, in software development world, it's always moving, it's always improving, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like a negotiation between the product manager and their team, how detailed to make the acceptance criteria. And I think it's important to find the right balance, because it can go wrong in both ways. It could be that the product manager goes down and writes very, very detailed acceptance criteria, supersedes the work that it's reasonable for the developers to do, especially if the developers are part of the conversation that precedes the confirmation that is the criteria. It's good to put it at the right level, and then it's also bad if the product manager has the developers part of the conversation to some extent, and then the product manager sometimes think, you know what I mean, and then walks away, and then it's not expressed clear enough, and then they come back in the end and said, oh, wait a minute, that's not what we talked about, really, I wanted it to be like this. You should have said, and then you need to have a conversation. To what level does it need to be clear? So I think that's something that should always be an ongoing negotiation between the product manager and the team. It's much more of an art than a science.
Well, how you master the communication skills, and for product manager, it's totally important, right? Because you stand like on behalf of the business, on behalf of the product, so you want to deliver all the things. So Nils, what is the main difference between task and user story? As we spoke about user story, but what is a task and why do we need them?
Yeah, exactly. So a user story is from the user perspective, but a task, in a way, is from a developer perspective. And so a user story is, there's this framework called value, usability, and feasibility. It says that value is from the business perspective, that this is something that the customer requested, it's maybe customer feedback or something similar. Typically, the business stakeholders will drive this. Then there's the design perspective, where they typically it's some wireframe or something like this. And then it's a developer perspective, that's typically a task, like a technical task or something like this. And then the nice thing with the user story is that you can map all these three onto a user story. So a business stakeholder, if they hear a user story, they can probably say, yeah, this would help my customer here. And the designer can probably say, if they hear a user story, they can think, okay, yeah, but then I need to design something like this to make it. And the developer, if they hear a user story, they, at least after some discussion, they can say, okay, then I need to finish these tasks. Maybe it's something on the front end, something on the back end, something on the database or whatever. And so a task can be something like add a new function to the backend, some service on the backend. But that adding some service to the front, to the backend will not have directly fulfill a value for the user. So normally one user story maps to several tasks for the developers.
Mm-hmm. And actually there also could be a case when there is one particular task that can have a subtasks into it. So this is also important, I guess, for developer from development perspective.
Yeah, absolutely, breaking it down further. And it can be that the use one task supports several user stories. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't matter what user story you want to do first, you still have to do that task. Setting right. up a database is a typical example. You probably need it for most mm-hmm. user stories.
Yeah, we talked just recently on the home like user story as an example, but maybe you can share as a little bit better example from the software world what you find that this is really good example of how user story should look like, and also then give us the really bad user stories, because what I have found in my daily job that product managers are having these problems to write proper user stories, and developers are saying this is a bad user story, please try to review it again. So can you give us a masterclass here?
yeah. So I think one thing that is good with the user story is that they should have the relevant context and the intent. So when you have as a X, I can Y, so that Z, then you cover all of it, because then you have the intent and you have the context and all of it. But often you can make some shorthand of the user story. So maybe something like user can edit a cell if it's you're making a table functionality. But so then you can have some shorthand. But then to keep the user the real user value, one nice tip that a great product thinker, Matt, that helped me a lot with the book, he has a nice example that is, because the end of the user story you have so that why, and then sometimes people write the user story so that I want to edit, users can edit the cell so that the content of the cell changes, and then you're just doing it formulaically and it's not helpful at all. But then another way of doing it is to actually add a bit of customer feedback. So you let the user story be user can edit a cell, but then in the information in the documentation behind the user story, you add the concrete customer feedback ticket that said customer Y wanted to, hi, why can't I change the value in a cell? Like that's when they requested it on the November 20th. Because then you know why it's relevant, and then you really have the user anchoring to it. Then you keep this kind of user link with the user story. So I think that's a good way to do it, to try to keep that as much as possible. And then the opposite, I think almost the worst that I have seen, but unfortunately I've seen it many times, is when people they feel that they have to use this formula as a I can so that, and then they go all the way and they say as a system I can Y so that boom, because then they use this pretty much for backend functionality or things like this, and if they use the word as a system then they have completely lost the underlying idea of the user story approach.
Because users are the people who live, right? It's all about the people, not about the system.
Absolutely. Exactly. So it can be that it's still a relevant thing to do, but then it's relevant because it supports another user story. It's a task that supports a user story that involves some user. And it can be an admin user. It can be something like this. It doesn't have to be a customer, but it has to be some user that gets some benefit, a person that gets some benefit from it.
Yeah, I imagine just one also bad example is as a chair, I want to just lay on my sofa. It's also like really bad example.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. What I'm finding interesting is that user stories is not about only, let's say, one or like two, three tickets, right? We call tickets for developers, but it's whole journey. As when I was a kid, I watched a lot of like Disney cartoons. The product managers are kind of building the same cartoon as a user story, and there is also the journey. So can you tell what is user journey?
Yeah, so basically the user journey is when you look at the steps that the user takes for a particular series of actions that they want to take.
It's under the one epic, right? Or it can be multiple epics for one journey.
Yeah, exactly. That's something that's up to, it depends on the context. If it's an extremely early phase and you're making a completely new product, then it can make sense to have the complete user journey with all the steps that the user would ever take. And you think about what do we need to do to have a product. Then you need also, you could also have one level above that's like who are the different actors in this drama and like what are the journeys that they each take, and then for each of those steps you can add a bunch of potential user stories and so forth. But that's normally not the case. Normally the case is just like you said, that it's like one epic and you focus on that, and then for that epic, normally corresponding to a feature. If you try to think about it, there are normally a bunch of steps that the user goes through, and then for each of those steps, they become the user journey. And then for those steps, you think about what are the user user stories that can go below each. And then user story mapping is the exercise where you look at the user journey, think about the user stories that happen across all of the steps, and then you say, but wait a minute, do we even need this? And you try to do, it's a nice verb, it's called slicing, when you just try to slice things away as much as possible. And then in this case, we didn't have much of a journey in our previous example, but then just making the roof, that's a very hard slicing. The next time, the next version, the person is freezing, and then you just make a fire or you put on a radiator, and that's the second slice. So you try to look across the journey, across all the steps, and then you say, what are the user stories really need for this to add any value to the user? And you take only those. It could be that some steps don't even have a single user story, and then you work on it from there.
Is there any like best practices or best techniques how I can map my user story? Let's say I have been seeing that many product managers are using sticky notes for that.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to do it. I mean, there are, you can use sticky notes, you can use different tools. I think many ways you can use Deliber, of course, but there are many ways to do it. The most important thing when you want to have a good user story mapping session is to first gather up the right people. Ideally, you should have everybody that has any insight into what is going to be valuable for the customer, maybe a customer present themselves. And it probably also customer support or whoever, or marketing or whoever has this insight. And everybody that will be involved in delivering it. So designers, developers, maybe the researchers that did this and whoever. And then you gather all these people up. That's the first key to success, is to have all the expertise and the implementation skill present. And then the simple way to do it is to do three steps. It's a little bit iteratively, but if you think about it as three steps and have some flexibility to iterate, then you will be fine. The first step is to just say or agree on the steps in the user journey. And here, I think it's good as a product manager to come into this session with at least a hypothesis for what the steps are. Because if you come in and there's not even any, sometimes you call it a narrative backbone, these steps, then it's hard, it can be hard to kind of facilitate the workshop around it. But if you have the steps, then you say, now we're going to talk about this epic or this feature. This is the main problem that we have observed. And the hypothesis is that we should look at these steps that the user goes through, this user journey. And then you can have a brief discussion to verify if that's the steps you should have. Probably it's roughly right. And then you say, okay, so please everybody grab a pen and paper or use the tool and add user stories that you think can go into this. And then everybody can add user stories, and then you can collaborate and iterate and figure out good ones and fill it up. Some are going to be not very useful, some are going to be great. Sometimes the user story is too big, and then you have to say, wait a minute, can't we make this a little bit smaller? And then you split it into two and then you put it up, but then you work a little bit on it. So that's the second step, to kind of fill it up with user stories. And then the third step is that you try to slice it away. So then you try to move all the user stories down and then say, for the first row here, the first implementation, what are the ones that we really need? And then people put up like maybe it's three user stories. And then you say, do we really need this one? What happens if we remove it? Then it won't work. Okay. What happens if we remove this one? Well, it will be a little bit annoying, but would it work? Yes. Okay, let's remove it. And then you go through, and then maybe it's only four of the ones that you do. And then you draw a horizontal line, and then you say, okay, this is the first release that we're going to do. And then you say, okay, is this enough? And then often the answer is, we don't really know. Maybe. And so maybe you should develop that and then test it a bit. Or maybe, you know, it's not going to be enough. And then you can at least prepare what's the second release going to be. And then you add some stuff. But before you do it, you should probably check and talk to your customers to see what happened with the first release. Was this step that we removed, was it annoying that it didn't exist, or don't they care?
Incredible. Taking into consideration that currently we are mostly working remotely, right? What tools maybe you found really useful for both user stories, both for, let's say, user story mapping, for user story journey. Maybe you can share with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Two tools that are very similar that we hear many people use is Mural and Miro. Mm-hmm. They are basically virtual whiteboard tools. And then there are tools that are very specifically targeted to doing only the user story mapping session. There's mm-hmm. one called Stories on Board, for example, that only does exactly this format, is completely made for it. That can work quite well as well. And then, of course, you could do it in Deliver.
Fantastic. And if I'm just like really fresh into this, you know, product management world, is there any great book that I should start with, or is there any person that I should write to ask what is user stories?
I mean, I think, yeah, exactly. I mean, you're holding up the book, I'll hold it up too. I think to understand user stories really in depth, and dive down, I think The User Story Mapping by Jeff Patton is a great book. And of course, if you want to dive into how user stories fit into the work with the featured documents, then of course Epic Alignment has, like you mentioned, a chapter on it. Yes,
we have covered user stories, we have covered epics, and we have covered tools that needs to be that helps us to create those user stories and user story mapping. Thanks, Nils, once again for such amazing energy here on the podcast, and hope you see you also soon in the next weekly recommendations and definition podcast.
Thank you so much, Alice. Great to talk to you as always.